Truth About Markets, 104.4 in London. Max and Stacy, how's the sound? Looking good?
Hey, I think it looks good, don't you?
I think so. I think we're recording. Well, where are we? We're in Cairo.
We're in Cairo.
Yeah, we're in Cairo. Last week we were in Beirut. This week we're in Cairo. And the revolution is happening here in Cairo. And, of course, all across the region, people are revolutionizing. They're revolting. And I noticed when we were in Tahrir Square yesterday, Stacy, that people came up to me and you, and they were saying, we love America. You know, tell people in America we love them. And this is interesting and problematic at the same time, because this revolution that happened here was the result of social networking and technology, and happened despite America's best efforts to keep these people subjugated and under the thumb of a military dictator, Mubarak. So this is going to be a problem going forward, I think, because it sets people up here for a big letdown and disappointment, because they will cut America some slack and look to America for leadership, but America is why they got to be in this position to begin with. So is it going to be possible for the revolutionaries here and across the region to embrace the technology side of this? Because this is a revolution much in the same spirit as Napster was to music, or Netflix is to movies, or open source is to software. But
well, I think two things. I thought on the one hand, I think a lot of them were saying we love Americans, and if you're talking about social media and social networks like that, then you do see a lot of communication going back and forth, and it's more likely to be very positive. I met a lot of Egyptian people through Twitter, and the ones that write in English, and I was able to find out information. And on the other hand, unlike what happened in Latin America when they tried to oust their dictators, the U.S. didn't get involved in assassinating people. So that's a little bit of a positive compared to the last similar situation.
Right, the Latin American comparison, because it happened quickly. If there had been more of a forewarning, America would have come in and done what it did in Latin America, execute leaders and try to keep the status quo in place. So this happened so quickly because of the technology.
Yeah.
And it happened before the U.S., typical U.S. response was mobilized and in place. Now, after the fact, you see, the problem is that the people in Egypt, the people in Libya and Tunisia and across the region are being abandoned by the White House, by the U.S. administration, by Hillary Clinton for the most part. And so they're opening the door for a Gaddafi who is now at war with his own people, killing people, on the back of what was a populist uprising. Had America sent one smart bomb into Tripoli to take out Gaddafi 2 weeks ago versus all the smart bombs in Afghanistan, all the smart bombs in Iraq, all the war in Iraq, the trillions of dollars spent in Afghanistan, in Iraq, with no democratic reform whatsoever. Here you have a true democratic reform, the cost of one smart bomb, 2 or 3 million versus 2 or 3 trillion. And you would have had an explosion of democracy and freedom and friends and allies of the U.S.
But that's not what they were looking for. They're looking for perpetual war. It's a military-industrial complex, and they prefer dictators, as that guy Larry Fink said from BlackRock. You know, he was interviewed, and he says the markets prefer tyrants.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. The people here in Cairo, in Tahrir Square, in Egypt, don't know that. They still think of America as a force for freedom, but they don't understand America.
I'm just laughing at you, at you going into Tahrir Square and arguing with them. No, you don't love me because I'm American.
Well, this is what I'm saying. We were there in Tahrir Square, and people like after World War II, people in France and Italy and stuff would come up and kiss Americans for liberating them.
Yeah.
So here we were in Tahrir Square in Cairo, Egypt, people coming up to us, getting one of their photos taken with us because we were American. as if we had something to do with their freedom, which if it were the given to the choice of the people running America, that's the last thing in the world. What they want is a free democratic voice and an independent media.
Well, but they're separating out. Maybe they don't want to be divided and conquered, like as we were speaking about in our latest Kaiser report, is they use the sectarianism, they use American versus Muslim. Because a lot of these people, in fact, more people came up to us, not to say I love America, I think like two or three did, of the many that did. The rest were coming up and saying Christian and Muslim were all the same. And, you know, we love Christians. And they were trying, that's particularly where in the U.S., Americans are told not to care about these people in this oil-rich region because they're Muslim. And Muslims are fanatics and extremists. So that's where the divide and conquer comes, is dividing us by religion. But everybody came up to us and mentioned Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of divide and conquer, so here you have on the same kind of front in terms of media and social media, social networking. So Hillary Clinton last week came out and said that America is losing the info wars. Stations like Al Jazeera and Russia Today and others are presenting real news. They're presenting honest journalism. And America is presenting fake journalism. Fox News, the predominant media voice in America, caught again last week completely doctoring reports to support their agenda. And this, of course, got the backlash from Glenn Beck and Fox News, who was out in his radio show and his show, calling Hillary Clinton insane, that she's supporting the emergence of this radical Islamic jihadi, which she equates with all Muslims and all Islam, and that's to the divide and conquer. So the Secretary of State of America, the second, you know, up in the cabinet of the White House, can't cut through even Glenn Beck's fog of sectarian violence-provoking nonsense and extremism. Because it won't be followed up. I mean, she made that very bold statement in America. But is there going to be a follow-up to that statement? Will they let Al Jazeera, for example, into the U.S.? No, because, of course, that would mean that Glenn Beck would have to compete with a bona fide, honest journalistic outlet. And that's the last thing Fox News and Glenn Beck wants to do, is actually compete. Because if they put Al Jazeera on cable TV, when you got the ratings in every week, number one would not be Bill O'Reilly, Fox News. It would be Al Jazeera, number one by a long stretch.
Well, I mean, I think Glenn Beck is smart enough to know. He knows that what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was saying is true. But Rupert Murdoch and his operations are very Leo Straussian, and they believe that using the media and religion are the two primary functions of control of the masses. You know, they believe the masses are stupid and that they should remain ignorant, and the elite who are smart should take care of things.
Yeah, well, will there be a follow-up, for example? Will there be a follow-up in the Huffington Post? I doubt it. Will there be a follow-up in Bill Maher? You know, Bill Maher, who is kind of challenges the religious extremism in America and around the world. But still, even though he says he's atheist, he still routinely considers Muslims to be inherently jihadi and violent. He buys into a religiously colored view, even though he's an avowed atheist. So he's an atheist when it's convenient for him. It's not an atheist when it's actually atheism is applied to every single religion in the world. It's only atheism is applied to his own religion. So, you know, again, this religious card is being played out in the U.S. over and over and over again. So the people in Egypt, again, I mean, how do you get around this? Because if they think they're going to run into the arms of America and that's a sheltering place, they're going to end up like the people in Vietnam who got slaughtered when America left, the people in Iraq that got slaughtered when America left, and the people here and around the region are going to get slaughtered once America grows tired of you.
Well, no, I think, you know, you're maybe more pessimistic. I look at it and I think, you know, these are just real people on the street. They see, they perhaps know that they're demonized to Americans in Americans' eyes about, you know, well, we have a distorted view of what Islam is or what Muslims are. And so they were just approaching us to say, you know, everybody looks so happy and just peaceful.
Yeah.
And they just wanted to tell us, like, we don't hate Christians. Whatever you're hearing, we don't. And, you know, I'm not... there was no indication at all that they were like, we're waiting for America to save us. That, in fact, it was the opposite. They're like, stay away from us. We're doing this on our own.
Well, I think the message from Tahrir Square from the people should be not that... should be that they're hopeful and that they can save America, because they've got the revolutionary impetus. They have a true people's and populist movement riding the wave of a populist technology, social networking. They are to revolutions what P2P file swapping and open source and other technological waves sweeping and disintermediating the oligarchs from this playing field. They need to school America. I mean, I don't think that they have that yet in their head, that they are really the leading voice here. America is playing catch-up. America's fallen into the clutches of kleptocracy. You know, America has become an ugly monopolist, you know, occupying force in countries around the world. So they have to take it to the next step in terms of being a leader. I mean, why... 25% of the country.
But that's what they're doing, is they're just leading. They're just doing. And by the way, I might say...
No, they're not leader. There is no leader.
I said they collectively are leading. They're just doing.
Right. Okay. But they have this underlying misconception that they have a friend in the United States.
No, I don't think they're looking at a government thing. I've never heard... In all the days here, I haven't heard a single person mention Obama. I haven't heard a single person mention Robert Gates or U.S. Air Force or U.S. Marines. I've only heard them say Americans.
Okay. Well, do they? They don't understand, however, that Mubarak is a puppet of America.
They do understand that.
Well, then it seemed, well, that was not my perception. The feeling I got was that they separate the two, that Mubarak was the bad guy. And the United States. Now, 25% of the country is on the hooked up to the internet. The speeds are pretty good. They got high, unlike Beirut, where the internet speeds are horrible.
Max, I think you totally underestimate what their genuine understanding of the geopolitics. Look at the very first major political act that happened post Mubarak. The very first thing, 29 years of zero relationship with Iran between Egypt and Iran, because he was a puppet of America, and the policy in this region is all anti-Iran. The very first thing is they allowed, for the first time in 29 years, two Iranian warships to pass through the Suez Canal. That was their first political act from the new sort of Egypt.
Right.
And that sends a huge message.
Sure, okay, well... What happens, what prevents, as we've seen, you mentioned Latin America, South America. 6 months from now, okay, they just put a new prime minister here in a few days ago. He was the people's choice, and this is somebody that they're pleased with. Okay, 6 months from now, America, through the economic hit men that we learned about from John Perkins, they assassinate him like they've assassinated the Iranian Democratic leader back in 1953. And they assassinated leaders all over Central and South America through the decades, including in Chile, famously, in 1973 on 9/11. So you have an assassination of the leader. At the same time, they explode a bomb in some dicey neighborhood that's going to inflame sectarian violence. And then the Fox News runs a TV show saying, jihadi hits Egypt. And we need to bomb them. I mean, this is what they did in Iraq. This is what they do in Afghanistan. They did it in Iran. They did it in Colombia. They did it in Ecuador. They did it in Chile. They do it in California. They do it in Wisconsin. They do it in Ohio. What stops them?
Maybe they just have to wait and see. I think they seem a little bit more in control. But I want to talk about the economics of the situation here. And it's a kind of a genuine anarchy libertarianism on the ground that you see.
Yeah, where's Lou Rockwell? How come he's not writing a story about how great libertarianism right here?
He probably has. You just haven't checked it out.
I get the mailing from him every day. I didn't see nothing.
Okay. Well, there are... It took me about 12 to, you know, 18 hours to notice... Well, I sensed something was very different about the city. And then I realized there are no policemen anywhere. No police cars, no nothing. Right. So I did ask our Egyptian friend, I said, where are the police, by the way? He goes, oh, they ran away January 28th and they haven't been back. They're too afraid.
Right.
And many of them will be arrested. But so there are zero police, just the army. You see the army in a few areas around the embassies and stuff like that. And the other thing is that, you know, yesterday everything is really positive here in Cairo, but we're reading about Alexandria and Giza, which is basically a suburb of Cairo. The army was battling the security services, which is like the SS, they call, which are the torture police, the guys who worked for the CIA torturing people and tortured many Egyptians. And the people surrounded their buildings, the security building in Alexandria. And there was I guess the security, the former torturers, spent the entire day cutting up paper, like shredding paper.
Oh, yeah, we saw an image of that, of the paper shredders going.
Yeah, they were removing evidence. This is what happens at the fall of a torture regime or a Nazi sort of regime.
Mm-hmm.
It's tortured paper. So what do you think of that? You know, there's this battle, this interesting dynamic here of the people and the army. It's the people's army versus the state apparatus, the torture apparatus.
Well, yeah, it does, like we said, up in Harlem, you know, there is no law, so people have to be honest. You know, that was a common phrase you heard in the ghetto. You know, people have to manage themselves in this kind of libertarian way, and it's in your self-interest to play by some kind of rule book because there is no police there to sort things out. So it's in everybody's interest to kind of administer themselves, which is, again, yeah, like a libertarian free market concept, which we've always said, or I have always said, is a workable concept. There's nothing wrong with it. The problem is when you have monopolists come in, dominate individual industries, whether it's media, technology, or anything, or government as it becomes a corporation and then dominated by special interest and select very narrow monopolist interest, it's not really free market capitalism. And, you know, you hear this all over and over again, like this debate in Wisconsin about the labor force and Scott Walker, the governor. The misinformation being pushed is, quote, we don't want socialism. We don't want socialism, so therefore we don't want anyone to make any decent living in Wisconsin or anywhere in America because we don't want socialism. People don't understand that the alternative here is not capitalism. The alternative is the gulag state. You want to be in a gulag or a prison. People are arguing to be in prison. But again, people in America don't even understand the ravages of America. The people in Egypt don't understand it because it's just been this brilliant marketing campaign around the world. This Coca-Cola, Nike, McDonald's, Starbucks, that idea that these products represent freedom. And it's so inculcated in the global mindset, it's just you can't get rid of it. It's a disease. You know, the Disneyfication of the global brain. It's a horrible pathological illness that you equate being in prison with freedom.
Well, okay, Max Kaiser, let's talk about Tony Blair.
Oh, dear.
Because we are here on Resonance 104.4 FM in the heart of London, the heart the which offers safe haven to many of these dictators, by the way. This has not gone unnoticed, I have to say. Oh, my dear Londoners, that you harbor much of the ill-gotten gains of your puppet dictators, because you are part of the American empire now. So Tony Blair has been like good friend of Mubarak. Remember, he was the one guy there on television going on the Piers Morgan show on CNN saying that Mubarak was a courageous man and a good ally.
Right.
While all the world, the young Americans, and the not-so-young Americans, and all the Brits and Europeans, everybody was on the side of the revolutionaries against a dictator who tortures his people. Right. Tony Blair came out as a world leader and said, we're against, you know, he's a good guy.
Right. Rhetorically speaking, Blair, the only one out there on the world stage who's coming close to his rhetoric is Hugo Chavez, who is out there saying that we should give Gaddafi a break and let's mediate a truce between Gaddafi and the protesters. Okay. Then you've got Blair saying that Mubarak is a good guy and who was out there a few years ago reintroducing Gaddafi into the world to get oil deals. So now, you know, here you've got Blair and Gaddafi and the guy who I just said a second
Chavez.
Ago, Chavez, are politically and rhetorically joined at the hip. Because why? Britain is, what is that all about? And where come David Cameron is not mentioning this fact that their former prime minister is in league with these guys, these oligarchs and these kleptocrats and these murderers?
Well, if you notice, I they seem to be condoning, you know, normally the U.S. right-wing media jumps on Chavez, anything he says, and like he's a socialist, he's a communist, he's a Nazi. Those are,
right,
you know,
so how come they don't jump on Blair like this?
Well, no, but they haven't done that about Chavez because, of course, they want somebody to sort the situation out there. They want somebody, they don't want Gaddafi out because they don't want to have to share. You know, the population of Libya is only 6.5 million. They have light, sweet crude oil. They should be a very wealthy population. They should be living like Emiratis or Qataris or Kuwaitis. No, they should have a better standard of living.
If you back out the subsidy per, let's say, American household versus the 6 million people living in Libya, as long as Gaddafi is subjecting his people to torture, Americans get another 50 or 60 bucks a year in oil and gas subsidies.
Yeah.
So America doesn't want to pay another $50 a year so that people in Libya can live like decent human beings. They'd rather have Gaddafi, their puppet, murder people. Same thing with Blair, who works for J.P. Morgan, going to these countries and organizing pogroms and genocides to keep the price of oil cheap, so he can get a big fat bonus check at the end of the year, just like those other scoundrels on Wall Street.
Okay, but listen, but you see it in Libya, and you see it in Bahrain, and you see it in other places where they're having unrest. And all of the many of the protesters continue to say, Christian, Sunni, Shia, we're all the same. They constantly. So I think they're very, very aware that religion has been used as a Leo-Straussian neo-imperialism weapon against them. This is what divides Americans and the population that watches the likes of Fox News or reads the Washington Post or the Washington Times or the New York Times or the LA Times or Huffington Post or watch Bill Maher. You know, they have a perception of a very evil religious people, fanatics that are against us because we're Christians or because of our freedom.
Right. Okay. They are aware. And of course, when we were in Beirut, they had the protest against sectarianism that the government has set up between three major religious factions, and they each have to hold a major office, and they keep the people oppressed by constantly claiming that there's contention in the upper ranks of politics, because by mandate each must be elected to a major body of the politics of three major religions. So it's a guarantee that there's going to be dissension, and in that dissension they oppress people. So they have a rally, anti-sectarianism, we want secularism. They want a pro-secularist rally. We were at that rally, we took photos at that rally. It was the first major rally in Beirut since the beginning of the uprisings across the Middle East and North Africa. So they're well on that way, and I understand that that's the problem. Sectarianism is the problem here, and it's a problem everywhere. And the people are aware that sectarian tension is keeping them down. Okay, but what replaces that? Because it's not enough just to say sectarianism is keeping us down, because into that vacuum enters competitive forces. Now, what's going to compete against them? Pro-sectarianism, we know that. Pro-militarization, pro-commercialization, and everything else that comes in the wake, in that vacuum. There's going to be competitive pressures. You just simply can't say, well, we don't want to be sectarian, and we have no alternative. I mean, they have to have something in force. Okay, here in Egypt, they want to create the constitution. Now, I asked the Constitution, I asked one of our journalist friends, should you have, as part of the Constitution, as part of your elected body of representatives, somebody representing the internet, somebody representing cyberspace, your cyberspace representative in government to represent the interest of a social networking site that was the basis of your revolution? And the response I got was, no, that's not, that doesn't sound workable. But, I, you know, I think it's still a workable idea. It's a good question. There needs to be some recognition of the mass as it's being expressed on the internet, because that's the basis of who of their existence and their freedom today. Or is it going to be like Obama, who used the internet to get elected as president, mobilized tens of millions of American youth to get elected? Then once he got into office, he abandoned them, never used the internet again. Totally destroyed his, the path to the White House by abandoning the people who got him there, and just used it as a one-trick pony, and that's it. Now he's just hoping to get a job at J.P. Morgan, like all the rest of the bums, like Tony Blair.
Well, he's burning that bridge behind him, of course.
Exactly.
He doesn't want anybody else to be able to use it ever, so that's why he's shutting down the internet as well.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, speaking of your idea for a representative in the parliament here of somebody representing the online community. Did you know that in France, from the next elections, they're introducing a new MP to represent essentially London, Londoners, French in London, because there are 400,000 that live here in London. And so it's possible. It's an idea that has validity.
Right. So they've got 400,000... French people living in London, so the French Parliament's going to have an MP from the French people in London.
That's right.
Right.
Well, it's being called basically like Northern Europe, which is essentially London, where 400,000 French people are.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of overlapping there, so it makes sense that that would be represented in the government. And there's huge overlap in the internet and the cyberspace area. I mean, that's where this revolution takes place. If there is no representation going forward, that door will be shut, and the means by which to revolt will be diminished. So, and I just don't think people here understand that. I know that the people in the U.S., everybody I've talked to in the U.S.
Everybody?
everybody who I've talked to in the U.S., I've said, is this coming from social networking? Is that the basis of the revolution? And the answer has been no. Mideast specialists, I've been brought this up, and the answer is no. It's just the people... did it without the, you know, social networkings were a factor, but that wasn't the key to it. It wasn't the thrust of it. You know, they don't want to, I guess, they feel like it's something to diminish the quality of this revolution to say came from internet, because people here don't understand the internet like people in the United States or in California or Northern California who understand that it's been a multi-hundred-trillion-dollar rocket ship of opportunity. So they're still in the internet dark ages in a lot of ways. So they, even though they used it to revolt, they don't recognize it as the basis and as the building block for a whole new representative form of government based on P2P. Instead of P2P, which stands for peer-to-peer, it could be R2R, revolutionary to revolutionary. You know, it's an R2R application. It should be on your cell phone, on your web top. There's an R2R application to keep the revolution fresh and moving forward.
Well, you talked about this on your latest blog for Huffington Post. You haven't blogged there for many, many months. But
yeah, now I'm a scab.
Now you're a scab because apparently the Huffington Post bloggers are going on strike.
Right, for the exact reason we talked about on this show. They blogged for Huffington Post on the premise that Ariana did not need the money, that they would have a safe harbor and blog without being looking like monkeys blogging for peanuts. Then Huffington sells out to AOL for $300 million and totally makes everyone who's been working for her for the last 10 years look like a chump.
And she's abandoning Los Angeles, of course. She's fleeing town.
Right. Is she, where's she going?
She's moving to New York.
Right, so she's hightailing it out of town, having milked that town unmercifully. And you know, imagine
had she tried to contact the agents of all these big A-list stars who blog for free and said, can they write something every week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks for free for me so I can sell? Had it been in the proposal that she was going to make $300 million from them writing?
Yeah, again, like Bill Maher, again, he He's blogging for her. He's promoting her on his HBO show. He's freaking sleeping with her, okay? Those two are an item. He has her on her show. She totally abandoned and sold out the entire web community on her site. Does he give her any kind of questions or interrogate her in any meaningful way? No.
He did kind of jokingly, cheekily say, oh, where's my paycheck?
Yeah.
Yeah, but... And if he was willing, he did say that on television. And I think, you know, there are clearly other people that are angry. Her argument is like, oh, it's like appearing on the Jon Stewart show or, you know, as a guest on Morning Joe. It's a way to promote your ideas and stuff. And well, I guess, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what you have used it. You've only done a few.
I mean, there are companies there, new startup companies, like consulting with Johnny.com, who writes a blog on Huffington Post, and it's basically just a promotion. It's an infomercial for their business.
Yeah.
Disguised as a blog.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of the blogs, so they're useless. Then you've got the aggregation side of it, which is just clipping links to other links, like a Drudge Report, which is useful, but is it worth $300 million? I don't think so. Then you've got celebrity bloggers who are fawning over each other. Then you've got journalists. Journalists, like one of the journalists that came over from the LA Times when they went bust, who was given, I guess, some money to go over there. But other people who consider themselves to be serious journalists who are also in the mix. And those people have just been basically discredited.
Well, there you go. Anyway, you did write a blog for them where it's a very interesting title and concept of revolutionizing the revolution business.
Right, that's right. Well, first of all, I wrote it. I didn't know that these people were going on strike. So yeah. I became an accidental scab.
It was about 10 o'clock at night. We were back in our hotel room here in Cairo. And I said, oh, look at this interesting story. Some bloggers are going on strike at Huffington Post. And you were like, oh, I just sent them a blog this morning.
Yeah, I just sent them a blog. But, I'm an accidental scab. But, it's called Revolutionizing the Revolution Business, right? It's R to R, revolution to revolution. And, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, you know, I would often say, as you recall, when will this P2P concept become politicized? And on Facebook, of course, you saw the emergence of all kinds of protests, you know, like UK Uncut is another social networking phenomenon, flash mobs that appeared at Vodafone stores and Topshop stores to protest Philip Green's non-payal of tax owed. And all those flash mobs that come with that, that's a P2P, R2R, revolution to revolutionary application. So that's happening around. And I talked about it. So this is becoming highly politicized, and you can't shut it down without shutting down the internet itself, which would shut down all avenues of commerce at this point, because most of the commerce comes via the internet these days. So the people here, as been demonstrated in Cairo, you can simply revolt against your government and get a regime change without violence. Now, that is a new thing that's never been the case. I mean, Gandhi's nonviolent campaign took years to build, years and years and years to build up to the point where they could have that march to the sea and push the British Empire out. This Facebook revolution in Cairo took a day. I mean, literally, people, like our friend was saying, one day he was playing video games. The next day, it just went out the call to let's take over the government, and they did it in the next day. So that's the power people have now. So then the question is being pushed on to the people now. What are they waiting for? So in the U.S., I asked this question on the Alex Jones Show. People are upset about the social injustice in the U.S. Well, now we know from the Cairo example, they can simply get up out of their chair, go to Washington, and have a regime change in a nonviolent way. This is now possible. We've seen it now in Cairo. We've seen it all over in a couple of other countries. In the UK, if in fact people are not happy with the situation here, we have the Cairo example. Get up, go down to number 10, and get a regime change. Replace David Cameron with somebody else.
And America really ought to do it before Blackwater gets too big. Because what would happen in the U.S. is very similar to Libya in that, Cairo, there was no violence, and the revolution succeeded only because the army refused orders to fire on Egyptian protesters. They wouldn't do it. Now, in Libya, he doesn't have an army. Well, the army abandoned him, but he has Gaddafi has tens of thousands of mercenaries who are willing to do it for money. And that's a kind of a big problem with this whole propagandizing in America, is Americans will accept very bizarre stuff as long as it's done by a private entity. So, you know, the Koch brothers are allowed to take over the EPA. The Blackwater can start operating on U.S. soil. And, of course, they have weapons, helicopter attack ships. They're buying a naval vessel, fighter jets.
Yeah.
And they will turn their guns on Americans. I doubt the Marines would, but because there is that sort of American thing that just like the Egyptians have of a love of their army, so I don't think the Marines would want to shoot on Americans.
Right. They have the mercenaries that are in the U.S., you know, particularly on that Mexican-U.S. border. Mm-hmm. Where you've got mercenaries are becoming a big factor in drones, flying these manless drones around the sky that can strike from above by remote control. That's now in the U.S. Remember, that was only going to be happening in Afghanistan. We'd never have them in the U.S. So these mercenaries are in the U.S., and you're right. When the revolution occurs and people decide to get off their butts and to effect a regime change, if there's a critical mass of mercenaries, it's going to be very, very difficult. In the UK, it's probably, I'm sure. I mean, when you talk about...
The UK, you just need to give them a keg of beer.
Yeah, if you're talking about staging a revolution, I mean, these days if you say, let's have a revolution, because it's a nonviolent Facebook revolution, I don't even think that it goes stray of any kind of question in terms of speech rights, because... If I say let's have a revolution in technology, it's not seditious for me to say let's have a revolution in the music business with a P2P application. Is that seditious? I mean, the people who are losing money in the record business, they're unhappy, but it's not seditious. If I say let's have a revolution in the film business, let's have a revolution in the software business, if I say let's have a revolution in the political space, that's not seditious. These are our elected officials that we are now replacing with the new regime of internet-based R2R application. It's business, it's technology, it's politics as a business and technology. So it doesn't apply that we're not saying about any shots fired or anybody getting hurt in any way. Just go down to number 10 and throw them out. You can mobilize 20, 30 million people if you want to. If, in fact, the idea is to have a better life, to stop these austerity measures that are being put in place to pay off the loans that were given free of charge without conditions to the banks. If that's not tenable for you. But let's forget about the UK for a second. Let's talk about another country where this is more of a pressing situation. And, of course, that would be Ireland. They just put in a new government.
Okay, can we take a pause there before you move on? Because you brought up austerity measures here. And part of the austerity measures has involved cutting funding to Resonance 104.4 FM. And it's very urgent. They're having a massive fundraiser March 19th and 20th, so in 2 weekends from now. And it's very, very important if you want to support a revolutionary movement in radio broadcasting, Resonance 104.4 FM, that you tune in and you could start donating now. Just go to resonancefm.com. And there's nothing more important. In fact, it's my birthday next weekend, so maybe we'll have a money bomb for my birthday.
Yeah, there should be. You know, the people who listen to this show, so we've been doing it for 5 years. Gold was at 400 pounds an ounce. Silver was at 2 or 3 pounds an ounce.
Gold was at 200 pounds an ounce.
Right. Gold is at 200 pounds an ounce. It's now over 1,000 pounds an ounce. Silver has gone up 400 or 500%. People have made hundreds of thousands of pounds who listens to this show. I know some people have made more than £1 million who listened to this show 5 years ago and took our advice and started getting involved in precious metals. That's £1 million they've made so far in the precious metal space. Now, throw a few thousand pounds or a few pounds toward Resonance 104 0.4. So they're having some kind of event, or what's going on?
It's a fundraising weekend, Saturday the 19th of March and Sunday the 20th of March. It's a big money bomb weekend of trying to raise enough money to keep them going for another year.
And is it, this is going to be on air? People saying send us additional funds on air? It's an on-air pledge drive.
Yeah, exactly.
Any live events or anything? Or
yeah, there's going to be live events. You got to go to resonancefm.com, check out their schedule of what's happening. It's loads of exciting stuff happening. Richard will probably be on the air for 48 hours straight.
Oh, my God. Is that right? I'm going to listen to this. You know, after 20 minutes, he goes into, you know, delusional hyperspace. I can't imagine 48 hours later. This could be the new Messiah.
So who knows? A whole revolution in broadcasting could erupt. Something could happen.
It could happen right here on the show during that weekend. This could be the regime change in the UK. It could start on that weekend in Resonance 104.4.
Yeah, get rid of all these money for the bankers. And imagine if we took all that tens of billions of dollars, pounds, whatever, that went to these bankers and gave it to Resonance 104.4 FM, we became a global empire of revolutionary broadcasting.
Yeah, imagine if Richard could hire 10,000 people to start radio stations around the world. I mean, the world would be a better place, wouldn't it?
Yes. How else? You know, people are being deprived of their freedom to hear the sounds of potatoes hurtling through outer space.
I love that show. How about that? Do they still have that bike show?
I don't know. Well,
bicycle show.
Why don't you look it up?
How about the Naked Short Club? Is that show still on this network?
Of course it is. We listen every week.
Man, you need extra headache medicine with that show.
That was it. Even fooled Max Kaiser. See, now how cool is Resonance FM that they could have a show like the Naked Short Club, where Stuart McDonald gets onto the show, these hedge fund managers and all sorts of tech analysts and crazy stuff, crazy banking talk. And it sounds like art. You really thought, Max Kaiser thought it was scripted and that they were just using, dropping in a few banking terms.
I thought it was performance art for about a few minutes. For half the show.
Yeah, that was great.
It was
so only on Resonance 104.4 FM can you do that. So anyway, everybody go to resonancefm.com and donate some money, and in the little line I guess you can say, leave a message, just say it's for Stacy's birthday. I have a bunch of ex-husbands, future ex-husbands out there.
Oh my God. Well, I'm gonna donate to this.
Oh, good. You see, I even got Max to whip out some money. He's going to have to sell one of his silver coins.
Oh, no, not that.
No, actually, don't sell your good stuff. Just get rid of your bad money.
Yeah, the paper fiat currency. It's going to be worthless in a year anyway. The paper fiat British pounds in the year, you won't even, you know, use it for toilet paper or to light a cigar or whatever. So you might as well give it to Resonance now and let them waste it.
Well, no, because Resonance 104.4 FM, the information you hear and the content you listen to and experience here is a lifetime. That lasts a lifetime.
Oh, I've had several lifetimes here. Been reincarnated a few times.
On air.
Yeah. I've died and reborn. A few times.
Well, you know, did you get a license from the Chinese government to do that?
Yeah, they want to give out licenses for reincarnation. Can you beat that?
You can't reincarnate in China without permission from the government.
Yeah, what's that all about? Is it Dalai Lama slap?
You know, speaking of government corruption, there was another story we learned here from the guy who's, you know, manages the pool area. Up at our hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that, you know, it costs £150 for a car license here that you have to get every year or 3 years, depending on which license you buy.
Right.
And £150 is about £10, give or take. And he said, you know, it never actually cost that, though. That was the official government fee.
Right.
But it usually costs between $750 and $850
right.
to get it, because you had to pay the bribes.
Right.
Now, he said post-revolution, his uncle went to renew his license.
Right.
And he, as soon as he was finished, he called his nephew very excited, saying, "Oh, my God, can you believe it? I actually only had to pay $150 for my license."
Right. No bribes.
Imagine if we have a society, an economy here in Britain or America without all the bribes that were paid to Hank Paulson and all his cronies to not destroy our economies.
Yeah, well, I think of those student top-up fees here in the UK because it's a formal way for people to pay bribes.
Yeah.
People pay bribes, these top-up fees, because the government sanctioned extortion scheme. The government says we have no money. We have to raise your price for your education, which should be a basic human right and has been in this country for many years. And a couple of things are wrong with that statement. Number one, the banks are not broke that they say that they need to give money to. The banks put all their debts off the balance sheet, and whenever they want a handout from the government, they scare the government by showing them the spooky debt closet. And then the government prints out a bunch of money for the banks and then comes to you and says, "We need a raise in your top-up fee. You have to pay us bribes," essentially. So, again, it's the austerity measures that they concoct to pay out the bankers who are holding the government hostage. Number two, they continuously raise these top-up fees, just like in any corrupt dictatorship, monopolized, screwed-up third-world country here in Britain, that every time the kleptocracy wants more free money, they simply shake down the population. It's just that in Britain, they pass a law through the House of Commons saying we're going to raise the top-up fee. But it's no different than third-world countries saying, or banditos by the side of the road, paying bribes. It's exactly the same mentality. It's just here, it's nice and squeaky clean and shiny and done on your iPad. And in some other country, it's just the roadside thugs. But it's basically the same banks. And the banks are the same everywhere anyway. You know, the banks in HSBC, the world's global bank, it means that they've got thugs shaking you down in every frickin' country in the world.
Okay. Well, speaking of being shaken down by banks, you were mentioning you were wanting to go over to Ireland. And I do know that we have a few people there, including Geek Boy and Gussie. And we're going to have to
Gussie?
Gussie.
I know Geek Boy, but who's this Gussie character I see mentioned?
I think you know Gussie.
Really? Do they change their names all the time? I can't keep up.
Gussie. He's our friend. We have dinner with him and his little ones. His littles.
Oh, see, I used to think of him as the shillelagh stick-carrying psychopath nightmare David.
You're not supposed to say his whole name.
Maybe what does he care? He's not running for office. He's down at the pub getting blasted as usual.
I'll cover that for him. I don't think he wants people showing up, especially because he wants to be an anonymous donor. I know he's got a
kidney donor?
No, he's got a whole stash of silver there.
He's got like 20 coins, and they're all stolen by his kids. I saw him at the dinner there the other time. His kids were stealing his coins and hiding them.
Okay, well, this is to the little Gussies then.
They're the ones with the money now.
Dig up some of those silver coins he hid in the backyard and send one to Resonance 104.4 FM.
Yeah, me too. Send one to me. Send them all to me. I'll keep them safe for you. Your dad's irresponsible.
Max Kaiser.
He won't keep your money safe for you. Send them to me, Max Kaiser, care of Resonance 104.4.
You're shameless. Okay, well, speak to those people out there in Ireland.
Right. Well, so, yes. You know, I get this email every day from David McWilliams, who's a swell guy in Dublin, who is a smart chap, who is explaining to everybody why everything is screwed up. And,
Did you lose your train of thought?
No, I mean, it's just, the problem is not that people don't understand what's going on. The problem is that people don't have a course of action that is going to make sense. Because if the political process is broken and corrupt, how can you solve it with more political process? If just like the debt problem is not going to be solved with giving more debt, you know, the politics is not going to be solved by increasing more politics. And there's only – so my point is that the people in Ireland who don't want to have to move out of the country to avoid being foreclosed on and sent to debt prison because the debt prison laws are still on the books from 100 years ago during the frickin' potato famine – you need to take action, and you need to mimic your fellow revolutionaries here in Cairo and simply get a Facebook revolution. Get 100 or 200,000 people together, march down to the, what do they call it, the Doyle?
The Doyle.
And say, come out. It's finished. It's a regime change. You're finished. Get out. Get the heck out.
By the way, why do they pronounce it Doyle and then spell it D-A-I-L? It's like, you know, it's not phonetic at all.
Well, it took me, it's great because I finally figured out how to pronounce the name of the last political party, and now it's gone.
I know.
And they've got some other one.
Fianna Foyle, and now we have another one.
Fianna Gael.
Fianna Gael or
right,
something.
Fianna Foyle. How do they spell, how do you get Foyle out of how they spell that? How did that come out, Foyle? It's spelled like something completely different. It was James Joyce. I blame him. He's the one who completely screwed up the English language by trying to compete with the British by reinventing the English language in ways that only frickin' Irish people could understand. Nobody understands a word that James Joyce has ever written. It's all in code. It's like the Da Vinci Code.
Irish people understand.
No sense. Yeah, they say that they do, but they don't. Because they want to think that they're part of some cool literary club that only they understand.
A secret society of leprechauns.
Yeah, nobody understands a single word he said. The guy was drunk. He was more drunk than even, you know, in America. We had this drunk down in the South who wrote As I Lay Dying. What's his name? Famous Southern writer. Never had a sober breath in his life. Who is it? You were a literary major in college?
I studied English lit, not American literature.
Oh, I see. That's going to be your thing. So,
no, I read Faulkner.
Now. That's what I'm talking about, Faulkner.
I know you were.
I just said that.
I know, but I was waiting for you to come up with it. You're always talking about
Look,
how
Faulkner and James Joyce, they're two peas in the same drunken pod. Nobody understands a word that they've said.
Oh, bull. Faulkner is easily understood.
Faulkner?
I could understand Faulkner. That's why I took courses in Faulkner. I attended a class. I began taking a class in James Joyce, and I said, "Forget this." I walked out and changed it to Faulkner.
Well, it's dribble. It's nonsense, really. William Burroughs. Let's say he's just slicing and dicing words. It makes no sense. Okay, he says, "Well, it's because I'm on drugs, so therefore it's art."
Yeah, okay. but then Samuel Beckett took it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But he became easier to understand. He went so far to the next level that it was easier to understand.
Well, you're saying because of this blank, empty space around which the narrative did not exist, we can fill it in ourselves and look in the mirror and say, yes, I understand that I exist, therefore Beckett must be real as well. Is that what you're trying to allude to?
Perhaps.
Uh-huh.
You think this conversation is going to get us some Irish money here at Resonance F?
No, because they're all broke, man. They're sending some...
No, they're not. Not the ones that listen to the show.
No, they're rich in gold and silver. Because if you ever see a leprechaun on the road, hit him in the head with your shillelagh stick and steal his gold. You know, because, you know, it's what's he going to do with it? He's just going to go down to the pub and get wasted. The leprechauns, they don't need their gold. It's a waste. It's a waste. And how come, here's a story, here's a question for you. Okay, two countries that were completely hammered in this crisis are Iceland and Ireland.
Yeah.
Both countries believe in fairies.
Exactly.
In Iceland, they have their fairies that they believe in.
The little people.
The little people. And like when the aluminum smelter came into town to build the aluminum smelter, they actually had to get a
Alcoa, the biggest one in the world, and they found the documentation where you have to get a certificate from the Icelandic government that your site that you're going to build has been examined and that there are no little people there.
Right.
And Alcoa refused that. They said they, you know, they're a major corporation and they can't put their name to a letter about little people.
Right. But then Lehman Brothers came into town and said, here, buy this $500 trillion worth of collateralized debt obligations that were put together by little people.
That's probably how they
and
got.
And the Icelandic people said, oh, we'd like little people. We'd like $500 trillion, please. Then they go to Dublin, and the Lehman Brothers and Citibank and HSBC, they go to Dublin, and they say, buy a half a trillion in mortgage bonds. You know the leprechauns would love it. They're like, oh, leprechauns? Really? Okay. But I'll take $100 billion. David McWilliams, what is he now? He's not a leprechaun.
Well, you know, they
David McWilliams is saying, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, he's the devil on the one side of your shoulder. Don't do it. They're worthless. And then the leprechauns and Barclays and HSBC are on your other shoulder saying, but the leprechauns want you to buy it. The Irish people are like, we love little green people, just like the Icelandic types. Look how rich they're getting in Iceland. We can be rich just like they are. We're an island, too. Our weather stinks, too.
Okay, well, that's about it for this episode of The Truth About Markets. We have so many shows, I forgot which show we're doing here. But you want to make one more appeal for people to start spending some money, open up their... I know that's part of our problem. I mean, like, we tell people to be savers, not speculators. But this is saving your musical soul, your soul. It's saving your soul to donate to Resonance FM.
Well, Resonance FM, 104.4, I mean, we don't tell anyone to buy anything except gold and silver. But unless we keep Resonance on the air, then this show will be snuffed out. And then you'll be left pulling your pud.
Okay, that's really nice way. So if you want to continue...
You're going to be there. Okay, then if we go, who takes our place? Gussie? Okay, Gussie and his kids? That's what would take our place. Then you'd be hearing, like, the latest horse racing results and trying to figure out where he buried his gold and silver because he forgot. Okay, that's what would take the place of this show. Gussie's horse racing tips. Is that what you want?
Okay, just say no to Gussie's horse racing tips.
That guy is a complete, he can cook, though. I'll say that.
Okay,
He's a good guy in the kitchen. Okay, put him in the kitchen, and he'll work up some nice stew. He's a genius in the kitchen. But once he leaves the kitchen, he's worthless, completely worthless. Can't do a thing. His kids are just stealing all the silver coins out from under his nose.
Okay.
His wife just looks nervously around like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Okay, it's time to go now, Max Geiser. Say goodbye.
All right, well, bye, y'all. See you next time.